In our last session, we looked at the crucial context for the birthright and blessing, a context involving especially God's sovereignty and grace. Now we turn to the birthright itself. First of all, let's look at parental failure. Genesis 25:28. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Right at the outset, the parents set the scene for disaster by their own parental failure, a mistake that is made far too often by parents. They showed favoritism and partiality for the boys. Rebekah loved Jacob more than Esau. Isaac favored Esau. And as we'll see later when we look at the story of Joseph, this parental failure shows up again in the next generation. Secondly, there was personal failure, Esau's attitude. Another crucial failure shows up in the life of the eldest twin, Esau. And we see that the supreme test of character is often found in little things. Esau comes back from hunting, and he's hungry, an uncontrollable hunger. Genesis 25, picking it up at verse 29. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, "Please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary." Therefore his name was called Edom, which means red. But Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright as of this day." And Esau said, "Look, I am about to die. So what is this birthright to me?" Then Jacob said, "Swear to me as of this day." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose, and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Esau's physical hunger, compared with Jacob's spiritual hunger, is in focus here. Esau wasn't on the verge of starvation. He could have gotten food from his own family easily. But the red bean soup Jacob was cooking was exactly what appealed to him at the moment, and he wanted that red stuff. And so he carried the nickname ever after of Edom, or Red. From birth, Red Harry's entire life seems pointed toward this unlikely focal point, a pot of red stew. The priorities of his sensual life and the absence of spiritual concern destine him for nothing more than this. In Hebrews 11, verses 20 and 21, Jacob is named among those who believed in the promise. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 12 through 17, Esau is called godless and is an illustration of those who do not believe the promise. Verse 16 of Hebrews 12 says, "Careless about God, or godless, as Esau was, he traded his rights as the oldest son for a single meal." Godless, or profane, means the opposite of sacred. Such a person is earthly, earth-bound. Spiritual things are of no importance to them. Esau lived for present pleasures, not future intangibles, for the physical, not the spiritual, for time, not eternity. Job spoke about the curse of letting your heart walk after your eyes, Job 31:7, and that's what Esau did. Hebrews 12:16 in the Message translation gives us a strong personal warning. Watch out for the Esau syndrome. What's that? The Esau syndrome is trading away God's lifelong gift in order to satisfy a short-term appetite. Later, when Jacob had gained the blessing through deception, Esau responded with a loud and bitter cry, Genesis 27:34. He is the classic case of someone who wants to do his own thing, turning his back on God, but still wanting God's blessing, and that's not possible. Eventually, the day comes when the reality of what has been lost strikes home to all the Esaus of our world with terrible impact. Esau's situation reminds me of someone's definition of real failure. Living without knowing what life is all about. Feeding on things that do not satisfy. Thinking you have everything, only to find out in the end you have nothing that matters. Esau had all the spiritual advantages of the day. He was, after all, the grandson of Abraham and the son of Isaac. But he squandered those resources in his carelessness about that which was most important and made daily choices in the wrong direction. Our daily choices also point our lives downward to the red stuff or gold stuff or green stuff, or upward to the promises of God. And these daily choices have serious consequences for us too, just as they did for Esau. We've looked at the birthright. Now we turn to the blessing. The blessing in ancient biblical times was the official transferring of the birthright and the family inheritance to the chosen son. It was more like a prophecy than a prayer, and God himself ensured the fulfillment of it. Chapter 27 of Genesis gives the story of how Jacob deceived his father to get the blessing. Let me summarize. Rebekah overhears Isaac's plan to give the blessing to Esau when his favorite son brings Isaac's favorite food. She gets worried and convinces Jacob to pretend he is Esau, taking a meal she prepares with her special recipe, and wearing Esau's clothing and pieces of goat skin to disguise his smoothness. Isaac isn't convinced easily, but in the end pronounces the blessing on Jacob, which especially focuses on the material blessings of the Abrahamic promise. Only later in Genesis 28 verse 4 does he bestow the full Abrahamic blessing on Jacob after accepting that God had indeed chosen Jacob over Esau as the son of promise. Let's note some highlights from the actions of the main characters here. First of all, Isaac's sin. Chapter 27 verses 1 to 4. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he could not see that he called Esau his older son and said to him, "My son." And he answered him, "Here I am." Then he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now therefore please take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and make me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Isaac certainly must have known God's prophecy concerning his two sons, which designated Jacob as the one destined for the birthright and blessing, as we saw in Genesis 25, verse 23. Furthermore, Esau had already forfeited the blessing by selling his birthright and by marrying Canaanite, Hittite wives. But in his favoritism of Esau, Isaac wanted to do this his own way. Even the rather secret way he goes about the preparations for this blessing shows that he knew he was doing something wrong, calling only one son to this ritual instead of both sons, and acting as if death is near when in fact he lived for over 40 more years. He relied entirely on his senses here, sound, touch, smell, taste, and every one of them betrayed him. The constant call of God to his people is to walk by faith, not by sight, by trusting God, not depending on our senses. A second highlight we see here is Rebekah's scheme. Her goal was good. She certainly remembered God's prophecy given before the twins were born, and may well have wanted to prevent a spiritual tragedy here if Isaac gave the blessing to Esau, the wrong son. But her methods were absolutely faulty. She tried to work out God's will ahead of God's time through her own efforts. She simply didn't trust God to work things out. And she was wrong in encouraging Jacob to be deceptive, an influence that had far-reaching implications as deception became one of Jacob's lifelong traits, like mother, like son. Which brings us to Jacob's deception. The end justifies the means appears numerous times as the operational principle in his life story. Jacob, however, had no patience to wait for God's timing or God's means. Hebrews 6:12 says, "We do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised." Faith is a critical ingredient in following God, but so is patience. Jacob had a degree of faith. Unlike Esau, he valued very highly the birthright and the blessing, knowing that these were absolutely significant gifts from the God of promise. But he had very little patience. His natural inclination was constantly to run ahead of God. He does it in buying the birthright, manipulating his brother in the process. And he does it in gaining the blessing, deceiving his blind father in that process. And we wonder how God could ever have chosen such a ruthless character. But he does. In his sovereignty, God operates against the odds. He goes against the grain. In his grace, he loves the unlovely and plants his promise in the unpromising. We too can act like Jacob, knowing what God wants, but impatiently pressing ahead of Him in fulfilling it, fearing we will be bypassed somehow if we don't, even working out very careful plans to make it successful. And it all sounds good because the goal is right, and we convince ourselves that our desires equal God's will, and so we're working on His behalf. The rationalization is subtle and seductive, but we are the only ones fooled by it.